My name is Keith Beavers. I'm very lucky to be a Stephen King fan because almost all these new audiobooks by him are read to you by Will Patton. If you've ever had a book read to you by Will Patton, you know what I mean. What's going on, wine lovers from the Vine Pair Podcasting Network? This is the Wine 101 Podcast. My name is Keith Beavers, and I am the Tastings Director of Vine Pair. We are here to talk about the next phase in the history of Burgundy, and it actually includes people called the Burgundians, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. Let's get into it. So you got Romans like, yo, wait. We do not like being invaded like this. We're going to go and conquer you. And they did. That's why we have something called Roman Gaul, which the Romans occupied for centuries. Well, at least until the 5th century AD. Then things start to really change. And this is where we meet the Burgundians. Now, the interesting thing about this story, and I will tie it to wine, but I wanted to talk about the Burgundians because the whole place is named after them. And their role here is not really a wine role. It's more like a kingdom in transition role for the Merovingian dynasty. I know. Let me explain. The Roman Empire disintegrates around the 5th century AD, but that's just so easy to say because it's not like everyone had email and phones like, hey, just so you know, it's all going down. No, it took a very long time for the influence of Rome to dissipate throughout this part of Europe. And while that was happening, it took a very long time to happen, and word did get out through time that this was kind of happening. And because of this, all of these quote-unquote barbarian societies started moving into what is modern-day France and the surrounding modern-day regions like Belgium and Germany. When all these quote-unquote barbarians would move in to fill the vacuum of the dying Roman Empire. But even as they did this, there were still Romans around. And actually, there were still local Roman senators throughout Central Europe, throughout Roman Gaul, even as it was kind of disintegrating. But up in Scandinavia, this is where the Vikings were. And there's a really interesting theory about why the Vikings left their homeland to look for other places for money and wealth and stuff. It's because there's a theory that there was a large climatic event that messed with the climate up there and messed with the agriculture, and people were starving and went out to find places to live other than where they were or bring things back to help sustain their societies. That's the theory. So when you hear about this little island off the south coast of Sweden called Bornholm, which is still there, it's now a Danish island. In Old Norse, it was called Bergendalmer, or in Danish, Borghand. The word together, Borg and Hand, or hand, means height and rock, or large mountain, or an island that rises from the sea, like a mountain that rises from the sea, because this island is primarily granite. And it only grows one real native plant that's sustainable to humans. It's a fig. So not only was this island up in that area, this is well after the Vikings, but like this story we're talking about now, but still up there, it was harsh up there and it was cold. And I'm sure on this island, they hunted all they could hunt and they were all starving and they had to go. So they all left and they started heading south towards what is now northern Poland, the shores of northern Poland. Even archaeological evidence shows that after 250 AD, no burial sites exist on the island. So I think everyone just like pieced out. So they worked their way down the Vistula River. It's the largest, longest river in Poland, by the way, these days, and they settle in what's called the Vistula Basin, the basin of the river. Problem is, people are already here, and they don't like the fact the Burgundians are there, and they are, as the history texts say, almost annihilated by the Gepids, which is another barbarian, quote-unquote barbarian people trying to fill this vacuum of the Roman Empire. So they head west, they make their way to the Rhine. They're on the east side of the Rhine, or the right bank of the Rhine River, which is right up on the doorstep of the Roman Empire. And what's interesting here is that this is the 3rd century AD. This is the century where we talked about him last episode, Emperor Probus was around. So he had already the Romans had already conquered Gauls. Probus was doing his work in Roman Gaul. That's where all the kind of the vines and the wines were happening. Well, there's this people over there on the border called the Burgundians, and they're looking to come in and take this whole area here. And Probus is like, no, 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 I have stuff going on. And he actually defeats the Burgundians from coming over the Rhine into Roman Gaul. So the Burgundians are like, okay, fine, we're just going to go ahead and settle on the east side of the Rhine. We're good, we're good. The thing around this time is I was talking about all these barbarian tribes coming in to fill the vacuum. Well, it was the Burgundy, mainly it was the Alemanni, which are basically Germans, the Burgundians, and the Visigoths. And, well, at some point, the Burgundians are like, look, we can help you guys defeat some of these tribes. So they become foederati of the Romans and help defeat the Alemanni. There's a lot of messy history here, and the Burgundians and Romans didn't really get along, and then they lost their foederati ship, and they got their foederati ship back, and by the time they did, and this is what's important about for wine, is they end up settling in a place called Sapudia, as well as near a town called Lugdunum, which is modern-day Lyon, and a town called Divio, which is modern-day Dijon, which is the heart of Burgundian wine culture today. And just south of Lyon is a town called Vienne, which we've talked about in the past. That becomes the capital of the Burgundian kingdom. They built a kingdom here. And the Burgundian kingdom had 8 kings until its ending in 534. It's right here that Burgundy gets its name. But what happens next is interesting, because even though the Burgundians don't really last after this year, their name holds in this region until today. Pretty cool. So that's who the Burgundians are. But then we got Clovis. Remember him from the Champagne series? Oh boy. Because see, before the end of the Burgundian kingdom, the Burgundians did a couple things to contribute to the history here, the history of France in general, before they were absorbed. Because what happened was, you had the Alemanni, you had the Burgundians, and you had the Visigoths. But what I didn't mention, who we all know about already, are the Franki, or the Franks. And they were pretty much, while all this was going down, while the, you know, all of these barbarians and the Burgundians were working their way down through Poland, which is today Poland and everything, the Franks were over a little bit further to the east, about them to make their way in and start conquering the majority of what is now France, and becoming basically the first monarchy of France under Clovis I. So the Burgundians, in 451 AD, the Burgundians were still in good with the Roman emperors. They actually helped Emperor Aetius against the Huns at the Battle of Chalons, the battle that repelled the Huns out of Europe forever. So towards the end of the Burgundian kingdom, the last real king of Burgundy, King Gundobad, he decides he wants to extend their territory. So he starts negotiating with the Romans. The Romans don't like this, and it sours the relationship between the Burgundians and the Romans, and it kind of ends it like, we're done. We're done. We don't want you to expand. We're Romans. We're done. We're actually not doing that well right now, so we're done. King Gundobad's like, fine, I'm going to stop doing these war campaigns with you guys. I'm going to go back to my kingdom and consolidate power so I can gain more power. And there's a lot of royal messiness going on right here. But what happens is Gundobad murders his brother, drowns his brother's wife, and exiles their daughters. One daughter actually ends up marrying Clovis, who helps convert him to Christianity, because she was Christian, he was pagan, then becoming the first king of France, Clovis the First, being ordained and baptized at the cathedral in Reims.
That is so meta.
Now, at first, the Franks under Clovis the First and the Burgundians were pals, but that wasn't ever going to last. The Franks had been expanding their empire for so long now, they weren't going to stop where they were. And eventually, in 534, the Franks conquer the Burgundians, doing away with the Burgundian kingdom forever and absorbing the Burgundian people into the Frankish Empire. And what's really interesting is that battle took place in a town around a city called Autun, A-U-T-U-N. If you remember last episode, we were talking about the panegyric and how there was this guy who was this orator, and he was begging for help because his town was poor and everything was dying and the vines were tangled amongst themselves. That is the town of Autun. So as the Burgundian kingdom falls and the Frankish Empire comes in, we are entering into the Merovingian dynasty, which is the Merovingian is a word that is derived from the first king of the Franks called Merovingian. And this dynasty, the Merovingian dynasty, lasts until 751 AD. Around this time, there's a guy named Gregory of Tours. Tours is a town, T-O-U-R-S, is a town northwest of Lyon and all this Burgundian area. It's just south of Paris. But this guy, it's really interesting. He was a historian, but back in the day, you know, a lot of historians were actually bishops. And this guy is known as the father of French history because he did a very comprehensive history of the Franks. He did other histories too, but that was the one that kind of, it's almost like defines the history, the beginning of French history. It was interesting. He did not want to be a bishop, and he did it under duress, which is really interesting. But becoming a bishop and getting all that money meant he could travel and do all this history. But this history of the Franks is when we get the first real mention of vines since back in the day when that panegyric was happening in Autun in ancient Gaul. What Gregory says here in this work, he says, "The hills to the west of Dijon produce noble wine that is like Falernian wine." This is probably one of the highest compliments you can give wine at this time, because in Roman history, the most popular wine in all of the Roman Empire was Falernian wine. And if you go to my Campania episode, I talk about that, but we're going to get more into that when we talk about histories of great Italian regions and stuff. But to say that the wine here was on level with the most revered and celebrated wine in all the Roman Empire is kind of high praise. And this west of Dijon is just west of where all of Burgundy is now. And that is about to take shape. And what Gregory says in this passage as well, I like saying Gregory. Gregory's my middle name, so I like saying Gregory. It's pretty cool. He says, paraphrasing here, "Clear water flowing from the springs around the city are sufficient reasons, in his opinion, that Dijon should become an episcopal see, basically an ecclesiastical jurisdiction." What he's saying is, bring in the abbeys. Bring in the monks. The monastic power of the monks. And so, you know, Christianity, Catholicism comes to this area. In 587, the king, the Frankish king at the time, King Guntram, gives a vineyard to the Abbey of St. Benedictus of Dijon, which is the patron saint of Dijon. Then, in 630, a duke of the Lower Burgundy area donates a vineyard at Gevry, Vosne, and Beaune to the Abbey of Bèze near Gevry. That's a lot, but Gevry-Chambertin, Claude de Bèze, this is some of the best wines in the world today. So what we're seeing here in the 6th and 7th century AD is at once there were vines available to the west of Dijon. But I got to reading a little bit about that town, Autun, and there's kind of a tourism website, and there's some history there. And in the history of Autun, it's said that even as far back as the Romans tried to grow vines in this area, and it didn't work. And they actually took their work over towards where Burgundy is today, but there were attempts in that area to make wine. So it's like, at this point, nobody realizes it yet because the monks haven't got to work. But what's about to happen is all that chaotic soil that I talked about in the Burgundian episode is about to be realized by a bunch of dudes in brown robes that have nothing to do. Well, they do a lot, but they have all the time in the world to start focusing on wine. And they're getting vineyards upon vineyards from nobility and royalty. This is where Burgundy really starts to get going. And the next episode, we're diving deep into monastic stuff, guys. We're going into the monks. We're going to talk about how the monks created what we know today. I got to tell you, wine lovers, I love this stuff. I love the realization of how some of these most famous wine regions actually came to be so famous. You know, I really would, wouldn't it be so cool if we could all just go on a tour and we could just go from place to place and kind of see all these old places and see these battlefields and, oh well, one day. Anyway, let's talk next week about a bunch of monks and a bunch of wine. Vine Pair Keith is my Insta. Rate and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. It really helps get the word out there. And now for some totally awesome credits. Wine 101 was produced, recorded, and edited by yours truly, Keith Beavers, at the Vine Pair headquarters in New York City. I want to give a big old shout out to co-founders Adam Teeter and Josh Mallon for creating Vine Pair. And I mean, big shout out to Danielle Grinberg, the art director of Vine Pair, for creating the most awesome logo for this podcast. Also, Darby Seaside for the theme song. Listen to this. And I want to thank the entire Vine Pair staff for helping me learn something new every day. See you next week.